Welcome to the Undisrupted Podcast with Adam and Carl. You know, there's all sorts of things that we try to predict in education, where we're going to go, and with this uncertain future in the new normal, ding, 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 uses the buzzword there. Adam, I wonder, what kind of, like, let's call them a fearless predictions do you have for what's going to happen in the fall?
We know this is it's fearless prediction, I think, not just education, but everywhere. I think we have seen the end of cash money. As my boy Randy Moss says, cash money, homie. I think, you know, this is the start of the end of cash money. I think more schools are, those ones that are holding out, are going to make the transition to some type of e-pay, whether you're talking about something with Square, Cash App, whatever the case may be. Nobody wants checks anyway. Nobody wants cash now. So if you can do it electronically, I think that's my prediction. I think this school year, you're going to probably have close to 90% of your schools having electronic payment for all shape, forms, and fashion.
A cashless future. Yeah. So I'm gonna bring in our guest today, our special guest today. This is Sandra Paul. She's the Director of Information Technology at Township and Union School, Public Schools in New Jersey. Sandra, welcome. What's your thoughts on this?
I kind of agree with Adam on that comment, because I saw, I remember talking in a presentation asking how many people actually had checking accounts. And I think there was the most amazing thing. I think of the group, I think there were only 5 people. And I was like saying to them, I was like, nobody uses checking accounts anymore. Everybody does transactions electronically. You do it directly either from your bank, you know, or you basically do everything through Amazon or, you know, through a credit card system. So I totally agree with Adam. I don't think anybody's going to be using cash and using checks now to get the school district to follow that
process. Yes.
To get away from the paper situation is also, you know, it's like trying to turn a Titanic, and you know how that happens. So
yeah, you know how that ends. Yeah. Yeah. Right, a cashless campus would be it would be an interesting thing, because you're right. Think about everywhere else in our aspects of life. When we want Starbucks, what do? You pull up an app, you hit a button, and then you show up 10 minutes later and it's there. It's that easy. It shouldn't be hard for districts and schools to get money from their constituents, but it seems like you're right, Sandra. There's a lot of red tape and paperwork to get through.
I mean, you have schools doing that now, though, with their with their ID cards. Kids wearing their ID cards, and instead of keying in something at the lunch counter, they swipe their cards. So, I mean, you know, we're getting there.
It's close.
Yeah, we get there because we do the same thing. We have the same thing with the lunch program and everything else, but we do it for everything. The one ID card is like everything on campus. Actually, that's the only way they can get a Chromebook. The ID card actually, has their student ID number, and our Chromebooks are not associated to the name of the kid. Our Chromebooks are associated to the ID of the kid. So because of that, you have to have the ID, you know, and everything else. So because of that, what we did was, which is something I'm planning to hopefully do, is since we're going to move one-to-one all the way down to second grade, because right now we only have 6 through 12, we're going to go second all the way to fifth. I was telling the principals, I said, print ID cards for your kids. Because I said, the other side of it is that we could actually put a reader on every computer so that any Chromebook, so that they do simple sign-on using the barcode. Let's try and do something like that. I mean, we're going to be using QR codes, is something that we've been talking about for a simple sign-on. But where I'm like, let's use their ID numbers.
Yeah.
It's so much easier. It's so much easier to use.
And my fearless prediction to kind of build on top of that, as you're talking, I'm thinking there's also going to be a future where we may not even have to print ID cards. Maybe it's just our face. Maybe it's a thumbprint. There's a lot of course, legal biometric things we have to get around with cybersecurity, which we'll hit on in a minute. But yeah, that would be interesting. You just open up the Chromebook. It knows it's you because it recognizes your face, and then there's no sign-in even required.
Be a good idea, because therefore they can't switch Chromebooks with each other and drive us crazy in the IT department. Because we can't figure out. From our inventory, it's like, I thought this belonged to you, and especially in a family where they're twins.
Ooh, yeah.
That was it, and they have first names that are very similar.
Yeah.
So I've had problems with that.
So the facial recognition software would have to be really good for that part of it, or maybe thumbprints. But we do we do like to start always with a serious, not so serious question. So our first kind of big serious, not so serious question is, you live in New Jersey, so how big a fan are you of the show Jersey Shore?
Not really.
I had to ask, because there's always some random
question. I'm one of those people, I don't really watch that type of thing. I'm more of a person that I watch anything that actually has a whole lot of shooting and I'm
how far are you from Newark?
Actually not far, but that's not the reason why. I'm one of those, I mean, it's like when I was doing my presentation, when I was talking actually yesterday, I watched things like SEAL Team, I watched those kind of things. So those type of realities that I don't watch.
Not so much. Yeah. Not so much.
Yeah. And anything actually, sci-fi.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I'm a fan of both. Okay, I know. Don't get Phil in charge. Phil involved in this, but I actually like both Star Trek and also Star Wars.
Phil Hentz, if you hear that out there, I imagine you'll reply to this podcast when it's right.
Yes, he will.
Yes, he will.
It's like leave it in the comments below.
Yes.
All right. So with this job, you have a lot of responsibilities. We were talking prior to kind of starting the podcast, and you're almost doing some accounting work as well, trying to find money for different things. But in this position, what is something that keeps you up at night, in making things happen? What's that one thing that you can say that really keeps you up at night about your job?
To be honest with you, the cybersecurity, security for our network, security for our student and staff information, stuff like that. That's one of the things that do keep me up at night, is making sure that the information is safe and not out there somewhere on the dark web or somewhere that, or somebody makes a mistake and they accidentally, have a student's name out there and I have no control over it. And that's one of the things that I'm actually concerned about, because with this whole pandemic situation and everything else, everybody was giving away free services. So teachers signed up for every single thing. And I'm like, no, this can't happen. You can't be just signing up for every single thing that's going on there, because you're putting out the names of the kids, and that's not legal. You can't, We actually as a school district have certain policies and procedures we have to follow. So that's one of the things that we had to be very careful about. We had teachers that were automatically started using Zoom. We had to shut it down. I think after the first week, we had to shut it down immediately and say, no, nobody uses Zoom. We were one of the first school districts in New Jersey that stopped it, because I was like, we don't have a license, number one. And number two, I was not sure exactly what was the privacy information. So we kept saying, no, if you want to use anything, we're going to use Google Meets, because we are a Google school district and we do have control over that. So, and even now, we still are recommending Google Meets compared to Zoom. So
since you brought up the cybersecurity piece, So what are some steps that somebody can do, or that you do it, or do currently doing, to like train and prepare your staff to get them ready to deal with this whole cybersecurity, all these things that are out there, and student data? Because once you get it out there, you can't get it back. So how do you prepare or train your staff and teachers for that, and students?
Yeah, well, there are three. There's a four. Way I actually attack cybersecurity actually in my school district. And the four ways include, one is making sure about the technology itself. So that's equipment, stuff like that, what we're doing. So for instance, like for our Chromebooks, we all use Go Guardian here. So I use Go Guardian to make sure about the filtering. We have a firewall system that filters our websites and stuff like that. But we also have another system called Umbrella, which is actually cloud-based, and we use that actually to also do filtering for websites. Another way we also do it is that we also get help from, say, for instance, certain government entities. So for instance, there's an entity called the Multi-State Internet. Why can't I not remember the name? Hold on a second. Let me.
Is it an acronym? We love those.
Yeah. MSISAC, it's called Multi-State Information Sharing and Analysis Center. And they're also associated with another entity here in New Jersey called NJCIC, which is NJCCIC, which is the New Jersey Cybersecurity Communication Integration Cell. And both of them together, okay?
Hold on a second. Let my brain get it wrapped around that. Because at one second, I thought you were going to go M-O-U-S-E. We're going to start singing Mickey Mouse.
Well, both of those organizations, it's funny, because one of the happens is that both these organizations work hand in hand. And following the Cisco Net, or I shouldn't say Cisco, the NIST protocol for cybersecurity, They are actually organizations that are free of cost. You can join them. And what they do, they send out information to you to let you know if there is a threat, if they find your information on the dark web, and they will help you mitigate if you have any issues regarding, basically, if you have any cybersecurity issues. So for one of the good things about it is that, say, for instance, there was an issue here in the actual town. I don't supervise the township network or their technology. I only do my school district. Okay. They reached out to me and asked me if I could give them a contact of the person at the town, because they were finding information from the police department on the dark web.
Wow.
So what happens? I reached out to my superintendent, who told me to reach out to the township school business administrator. Sorry. And through him, I spoke to him and I said, listen, just to let you know, Don, this is what's happening. And then, you know, he mentioned what had happened. They did have an incident. And with that, I told him, I was like, make sure you reach out to them, because when you reach out to them, they will help you mitigate the issue. They will help you to get the information off the dark web. And that's what, that's the reason, you know, those government entities are some of the entities that we use in order to help us. Another thing we do, which is a third aspect of it, is we create certain policies and procedures. You know, say for instance, you know, not everybody has access to every single piece of data that's located in the school district. You know, so because of that, we make sure like who has access to our student information in system versus who has access to our business systems. You know, who has access to what? Everybody is, you know, there's a username and password situation and everything else. From listening to yesterday at the Future Ready Tech Leader Summit. People were talking about, yeah, that's it. Somebody mentioned about how you guys were doing some of the two-factor authentication. Yeah. And because of that, now I'm going to adopt that, because right now we're in the middle of constant changing of the password and it's driving me crazy.
Yeah.
Everybody comes back in September and they can never remember their password.
Yeah. You
know? Even though they've been working the whole summer. I don't know what it is, but somehow that they come back in September, they never remember their password. So because of that, I'm looking to try and implement some new stuff regarding two-factor authentication. And therefore, it's not a matter of changing the password. It would be a different way of also getting that information for authentication on our network. So we have those type of things, which are the policies. And you know about government policy, FERPA, CEPA, FERPA, COPA, HIPAA, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right. Yeah. I mean, that's one thing about technology, man. We have acronyms.
We love
acronyms
them.
Too.
Right. Then the other thing that we started doing was also training our staff, which is the fourth method that we've been following. So we require every single person that has an account on our district network to be able to be trained. So we use an online system that they have to go through certain videos and stuff like that, and they have to be trained in order to get that done. The other thing that we've been doing is also because of the, including the policy part of it, we've been including telling people about why you have access to certain things and why you will not get access to certain things. You know, teachers may have access to see a schedule, a student's grades and whatever it is. They might have access to student information, but that information and everything else, you're bound by the school district that you can't put that out on the web. The other thing that we're trying to do is we're using I don't know if you guys know of a service called KnowBefore, which they send out phishing campaigns and stuff like that. So we're working on that to try and see, you know, who touches what. And then what we're going to do is require them to do the training. So if you click.
Then you're registered for the training automatically.
Yeah. You are going to training. You have to do the training. And what we're doing is locking your account until you finish the training.
Oh, wow.
That's serious. I mean, I think it was Tyler Park from the Future Privacy Forum who said that there was 90% of cybersecurity leaks at school districts now are coming from phishing, because we're getting better on our passwords and our two-factor authentication or even biometric. So now it's just a matter of people giving freely the information back. I love that idea, that KnowBefore. Yeah, I've heard of a few schools using it.
Yeah, we had a ton of those that happened during the COVID situation where we were out. There were so many, we have some security measures in place and we blocked so many of them. And that was one thing that I had my department do. I'm like, okay, let's just find out how many things we're blocking. So when the one thing does get through, they know that we blocked like 8,000 this month or something. But you know, there were a couple that made it through that we were able to pull back out of people's inboxes. But, I mean, they were pretty sophisticated looking, you know, letting people know. I mean, they've gone to the length of going and finding my name off our website and plugging it in there in an email, but they spelled my last name wrong.
Yeah. But on your phone, it may look like it's coming from you because they don't always see the actual email address. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because that actually happened to our superintendent this summer.
Yeah.
And it was funny because everything is first initial, last name. Right. Okay. And the actual email address was superintendent@twpunionschools.org. Nobody uses a title. Everybody uses the first initial, last name. As soon as it went out he reached out to me and he was saying, somebody's doing my phishing. I was like, okay, fine. I said, let me see. So I started blocking that email address, which I had to be very careful about because, you know, his name is in everything, you know, the names
and
everything. So we had to make sure about that. But the other part of it that was kind of funny was, one person clicked on it. So that person that clicked on it and everything else, she couldn't get back in to do her rest of her lessons.
Oh.
She was blocked.
Yes. Funny how that
works.
So
she reached back to me and I was like, well, just to let you know, you have to do the training. I was like, you clicked on the email address. She was like, I was like, okay, I'll let you back in, but you better do this training before a certain amount of time because after that, I'm blocking you again. We have the notes and everything else stating exactly what she did and how she, you know, what she accidentally did. So. But those are just some of the things that we do when it comes to cybersecurity. Those are things that actually keep me up at night.
Yeah,
I never know what's going to happen.
I wouldn't mess with Sandra because she watches those gun shows. So
yeah, I do not want to be on her list.
No. Well, talking about cybersecurity, I know that's one of your passion points. But another one that I don't know a lot of people know of, but something you're working on is really that bringing more girls into coding and its technology. So if for people out there listening, what are some resources? What are some areas you're pointing to get more girls into coding and tech?
Well, being that I'm a girl too, or was, I'm getting grayer.
But as you walk into, when you walk into rooms, we've been at events together, the three of us, and you look around, and Adam and I have talked about this with color as well, but also gender, where you look around, there are no other females in the room that are holding these titles a lot of times. So that's got to be personal for you in a lot of ways.
Oh, it is. I've had negative incidents happen. Mm-hmm. That's not the point here. The point is to encourage girls to, you know,
be right.
And, you know, it's kind of funny because here's the situation, okay, is that I have boys and my boys have boys. So I don't have any, you know, the only thing I would have is nieces and stuff like that. You know, I don't have any daughters and I don't have any granddaughters. So because of that, it's kind of interesting to be in that situation, having young men, you know, especially, you know, being that my family is a minority family. Actually, we're mixed up, you know, who knows what we are. But anyhow, the whole idea is making sure that getting the guys to understand how to support, you know, their wives or if they ever have daughters or whatever it is, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. But they also doing me as a director of IT, making sure the girls that I have in contact with that we're helping them out. For example, one of the things we did was we actually, this year in my school district, we developed three programs of girls who code, after school programs for our girls. We did one at middle school and one at the high school so that we could encourage more girls to be a part of the program and everything else. So they would see that coding is not that it's a, I hate to say these guys, but it's not just a nerdy thing, yeah. Geeky thing. There's a lot more other things to behind coding and everything else.
Yeah.
So that was one of the things that, you know, what can I tell you? So I've been called both nerd and geek. So, those are just some of the things I've done. Something else I've also done is I've invited female engineer to come in and talk to kids. Most of the times I've actually invited a Cisco engineer who happens to be a minority female. And she came in and she spoke to our Cisco Academy students, which leads to some of the courses that I've been trying to get offered inside the different school districts I've been in. We do Cisco Academy, Oracle, you can do Adobe. There are certain academies that we have where the kids are able to walk out basically with some sort of actual business certification. So if it's a summer or if it's, you know, high school and they decide that they don't want to go back to college or go to a technical school or whatever it is, they actually have something that they can actually start working immediately. Something else we also did was with encouragement by myself and a computer science teacher, we had one of our female students apply for a grant from NCWIT, and we did a girls' summer program for our middle school girls. And that worked out pretty successful, you know, to encourage more girls to do coding and, you know, understand exactly what the engineering technology is. Because one of the things I think some people lose a track of is basically there is a, everybody talks about STEM. And to me, STEM already existed. It's just that we didn't call it STEM. At the time, we were calling career technical education. I don't know about you, but the plumber, when he comes to my house, he has to understand a lot of science.
Right.
If he doesn't understand water flow, if he doesn't understand pressure and everything else, let's put it this way. The water that I think would either be coming out of the pipe at the house or flushing my toilet, if you really think about it.
yeah.
All right. It's not going to go down, number one, or come out of the tap. Or number two, the other part of it is that it's going to be such a small amount of water, it's not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, you know, I look at both career technical education and STEM as actually being a marriage. And actually, we do that here in my district. We marriage put the two together, because to me, I think one has to flow. One works with the other. And what I do is we talk about those different things. Like we have something called an ACE program, which includes architecture, construction, and engineering, ACE. And mm-hmm. it's an after-school program that we encourage our anyone in the school district to anyone in the high school to join. And it's actually run by one of the maintenance workers in the school district that I actually work with. And he's actually an electrician.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So it's run, you know, he had actually, when we went to this pandemic thing, he was like, please help me with Google Classroom. I was like, so I helped him and found some online things kids could try out. I told him, I said, whatever you do, put a caveat that you cannot do this at home. Do not use any live wire and do anything, you know, don't be building and, you know, getting concrete. And
it could go viral though. Come on.
Yeah. You gotta have the scrolling text at the bottom. Do yes. not try this at home.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is a trained professional.
So, you know, those are just some of the things that I do to encourage both minority and also females to be part of a program, because I want to see girls really do some great things. And I think it's a part of a part of technology and engineering that I think is missing, because there's a whole population of females and also minorities that could add to the knowledge base that we have.
Mm-hmm.
What we're doing right now with technology and engineering. So,
well,
and you hit the nail on the head with that, because you have to be very intentional about this work. And so you can't just say, oh, we want to get more students into mm-hmm. it. If you know that there's a deficiency in your female population in science and engineering, computer science, engineering, you have to be intentional about grabbing those students and putting people in front of them that look like them, so they can see themselves in those roles. So, you know, kudos to you for that work that you're doing there.
Thank you.
I'll just add that as a father of three, and of course, and Adam has girls too, you know, it's something around this point. Like my oldest is going into middle school, and I think the data shows that it's somewhere between fifth grade and seventh grade is where they start to kind of get turned off to it. You know, they start, maybe it's because they see mostly boys in those classes, or it's just not, I mean, they're interested in it early on, but somewhere around there, it's like that tipping point. So are you seeing the same things in your schools?
Yeah, we do. We do see the same things in our schools. Actually, I'm part of a PLC with Kane University, and actually we're going to be presenting at the online equity conference in, I think it's July, I can't remember. But that's one of the things we're going to be talking about, because we actually have some data from a few school districts in the state of New Jersey. Plus also we have some information from the state regarding AP computer science. And we are seeing the deficiency with it when it comes to minority and when it comes to female students that are signing up for it. And there's a major deficiency right now, because what happens is that even the enrollment of people taking computer science is definitely dropping. People are not into, you know, going into that field. And that's a shame, because we are in a fourth evolution of information age. And because we're in that, that's what's going to be actually the most marketable thing right now, is the information. And yep. Because of that, everything is going to be based on a one and a zero.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this, Sandra, as we kind of bring things to a close here. With mm-hmm. our jobs, we know there's so much we have to deal with just in a regular year. Just in the regular year.
Yeah.
But we've had to deal with school closures. We had to deal with passing out devices, virtual learning, getting kids connected, families connected. The list goes on and on and on and on. And sometimes people just want to just turn in that letter of resignation and say, you know what, I'm just going to become a hobo. I can't deal with this. Because they just get so off-centered and so disrupted in their lives. So what is some words of encouragement or something that you can give people out there so to keep them from, you know, becoming undisrupted?
Okay. Well, one of the things, I'm quite sure anybody who's actually listening to this or watching this would realize I'm very passionate about what I'm talking about. I've been doing this for basically about 27 years. And not as a director, I've been only a director for 20 something years, but I've been in education itself about 27 years. One of the things that I would always encourage people, anyone, is that remember your why. Why are you basically getting up every morning to do what you do? Okay. And for me, my basic why is actually children. And for me, I look at it in the sense that if I can do certain things for my own children, I should be able to do the same thing for the children in the community where I work. And that's how I look at it. I you know, I will tell people in no uncertain terms, I have 7,200 children that I'm responsible for. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's preparing them for their future. But the other part of it also is that realize you have to be reflective and know yourself. You must know yourself. Because if you don't know yourself, you will burn out from doing this. And after you've hit your head against the wall so many times, or you've actually hit it against the desk so many times, you realize, because nobody's seeing what you're seeing. That's the reason why I'm talking to you, both of you right here, because you guys see what I see. You understand what I'm saying. And there are so many other educators that don't see it. They don't understand it. But it's critical. Every year we lose 12th graders going to college and career. And if we don't supply what they need as a skill, equipment, or whatever it is, they're going in basically without having it. They're going into the world disabled. I hate to use the term, but you know what I mean.
Right.
They're going into the world that way. You have to understand yourself and understand that, okay, you can do this. And you can do it the way I did it, or you can do it any way, but you have to understand yourself. And you have to be reflective and saying, what is the best things for kids? And that's what I do. I get up every morning and look at myself and say, what am I doing every morning? I'm doing the best thing I can do for kids. And that's what that's my mission. Because to me, if I'm doing it for my kids, I'm hoping somebody's doing it for my grandchildren. And unfortunately, they don't live in either one of your states. One lives in California, one lives in Florida. So I'm hoping that whoever their tech people is or whoever their administration is thinks about it the same way that I know you two also do.
I think you just hit it right there. And I think that, and those of you that are listening or watching, you probably can tell and feel the passion that Sandra has for this. She is a gem in our industry. And I'm thank you for so much for joining us today, Sandra. Where can people find more about you, your work, follow you?
I'm actually on Twitter a lot. So, you know, my Twitter handle is at SPAUL6414. You can find me there, or you can just email me at SPAUL6414@gmail.com. I made it really easy.
Yes. It syncs up well. Sounds like someone who's in tech, you know it well. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, this has been great. This has been another episode of the Undisputed Podcast. He's Adam.
He's Carl. And remember, guys, we are better together.
And we are better undisrupted.